Hello, I'm Adam, and welcome to Tales from the Potting Bench, a gardening podcast where you'll hear tales and stories from the most interesting and different people from the world of both indoor and outdoor gardening. We are now well into the whopping fifth season of the podcast, with new guests and brand new stories and conversations with some people you will definitely know, and some people that you'll come to know through these episodes. Once again, I'm thrilled to say that this podcast is proudly sponsored by the wonderful people at Plant Grow, producers of award-winning organic compost, mulch and fertiliser made with zero chemicals. Great for your garden and even greater for the planet. And I know because it's all I use on my garden. Don't forget, if you use the code POTTINGBENCH on plantgrow.co.uk, you'll get 10% off your order. Before we get into the conversation of this week's episode, I'd like to ask, if you listen to this podcast and enjoy it, then please consider rating and leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. It's really easy to do, takes just a few minutes of your time, but it helps this podcast get into the ears of more like-minded planty people. So, on to the conversation. In this week's episode, I'm joined by someone with one of the most beautiful Instagram pages I think I've ever seen. Firmly rooted in the cottagecore niche online, more on what that means later, this account and the person behind it is bound to inspire you and your garden in the future. I am, of course, talking about Ramona Jones, otherwise known on Instagram and TikTok as Monologue. Ramona talks to me here about her world of flowers, plants and cottages, and also how she tackles her autism through the wonderful world of gardening, and also her appearance on Gardener's World. Enjoy. So, for anyone who is not familiar with you right now, who are you and what is it that you do?
So my name's Mona and I'm a content creator. So I make garden videos on TikTok, Instagram and YouTube. And I've been doing this for about 10 years. I started taking pictures and videos in like National Trust gardens or public gardens and just sharing those with people. And then 4 years ago, I was lucky enough to move into a house with my own garden. So I've sort of moved my narrative onto showing my journey of renovating a cottage garden and sharing that with the world. And I found it makes people feel calm. And I really, really love giving people that sense of calm.
So when you started your, did you start your Instagram account 10 years ago?
I think it was, 2012. It's been a really long time.
Wow. Was it still called Monologue? Do you call it Monologue or Monologue? Or
I don't actually
that's
know.
That's the play on words, isn't it, I suppose?
I guess it has to be Monologue because that's how my name's pronounced. But it's something because I don't really use it offline. I don't actually know how it's meant to be pronounced. So down to interpretation, I suppose.
So when you started that, that was obviously intended as just as the name it suggests, is kind of like a log of what you were finding at gardens and things.
It was. And it took me a while to come up with the name. But back in the day, Instagram had like a caption limit. So you could only use so many words. And I found that I had way more to share than the caption limit. So I thought, oh, I'm monologuing. And then I thought, oh, it's got a nice ring to it. I'm Mona and I'm monologuing. And that's how it came to be.
So but was that just kind of National Trust and stuff you said at the start? So how long ago was it that you said that you got your cottage?
So we got our cottage 4 years ago. And before that, I knew I loved gardens, but I never thought I was going to be someone that had access to them just because it costs a fortune to buy somewhere with a garden.
Yeah, of course.
So I used to go and visit National Trust houses every weekend since I was a teenager, and I found it embarrassing because people would be going to these really cool parties, and if I saw a colleague on Monday, they'd say, what did you do over the weekend? And I'd embarrassingly say, went to this National Trust place or this open garden, and my story never felt like as cool as theirs did. Yeah. But I feel like I've grown into it now and accepted that it's fine as a hobby, it's lovely, and if it brings you joy, then that's all you need. So that was where it came from and where I started going to gardens. And then to be able to have one, it's just amazing. I love it. I feel like it's going to get me through the rest of my life, and I'm just excited.
Yeah. Did you ever dream that because your Instagram is, we've got to talk about like the actual fact of your crazy Instagram that's wildly successful. Did you ever dream that it would take off in the way that it has? Because it's, I can't keep up with how many followers you've got, but what is it now? It's like 400.
I think it's
500.
550. I'm not actually sure either. Right. It does go a bit nuts. I don't think I ever thought of it as a job, because back in 2012 it was such a new thing. I think back then it wasn't really a cool thing to do, and there wasn't work opportunities on there either. So it's something that it feels like it's really amazing and really lucky that it's happened, but it was never something that I anticipated, I suppose. And if I look back to teenage me in 2012 and I could have said, you know, you can make your living doing this, I mean, I would just be mind blown by that.
Yeah, it is bonkers. It has taken off in such an amazing way. But it's not a surprise, though, really, because I think what you've got is such an incredibly distinctive and gorgeous style. Obviously, you've got the amazing garden to work with, but what you do is it really kind of stands out as something quite different, I think. If anyone hasn't seen it, like, how would you describe what it is that you do on your page?
Thank you. That's really kind. I guess cottagecore is the word that a lot of people use now. So it's like a nostalgia for the past, but without maybe, you know, some of the rules that we had in the past that didn't do anyone any favours. Do away with that and come into it with a modern mindset, but appreciate the nice bits of the past. So it's quite colourful, lots of vintage things. Obviously, the house is quite old. I think the house is about 250 years old. And it's kind of cosy feeling and warm and safe. And I feature lots of animals. I've got ducks and dogs. I just try and curate a really safe, warm, colourful, cosy space.
No, I totally agree. And I think it is so colourful. It's really tough to describe cottagecore, isn't it? Because I think you know what it is, or you don't know what it is. And it's then tough to really describe that. And I saw, it's really funny, because I just went onto your page just before we were talking. And one of the last things that you posted was a reel that was in response to a comment that had said something about Beatrix Potter. And that's like almost sums it up almost perfectly, doesn't it, in a weird way?
It does, yeah. I think cottagecore is something people have always done. It's just that the word for it is quite new. But did you ever watch those Beatrix Potter programmes? Yeah. I guess it must have been like 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
A little TV series that documented the life of Beatrix Potter, writing her stories and imagining the characters. I think that nails cottagecore. We just didn't have the word for it then.
Yeah. So we never imagined that this was going to kind of take off in the way that it has, but it has taken off. What were you doing before this was kind of your thing?
I think I was having a bit of an existential crisis because I didn't know how I was going to fit into the world. So it feels like a relief to be able to do something creative and work from home. And I did try working in like a conventional office job, but it just did not suit me at all. So because I'm on the autism spectrum, I'm super sensitive to noise and light and sensory stuff. And as you can imagine, like an open plan office is the worst place to be if you're sensitive.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of people don't like it, do they? And I remember I have face blindness as well, so I can't recognize people. And I worked in this office of maybe 40 desks, open plan. And I went in every day and people would say hello to me and I'd be like, I don't know who that is. And they're talking to me like I've been chatting to them every single day. And just trying to navigate the space before you even get down to the nitty gritty of actually working used up my whole energy. So I thought, how on earth am I going to work? So as I started making an income through Instagram, that was just amazing because I thought, oh my goodness, there's a pocket of the world that I can fit into and I can earn a living and I can create something that I really enjoy. And it kind of solved all of those problems.
I think, yeah, you mentioned about the fact of being on the autism spectrum, which is something that you are open about on your Instagram. And you've also been on Gardener's World as well, and you've talked about it on there. Like, how crazy was that? And I think the thing about the autism spectrum is that it's not necessarily, it's obviously talked about much more than it perhaps was in the past, but it's not something you come across massively commonly and within the gardening world necessarily. Did you feel as though that was something that you knew that you needed to talk about?
I don't know. I think there is kind of a desperation to get people to understand, because usually if you tell someone that you're autistic, they look at you and go, but you're not like my four-year-old cousin who loves dinosaurs or trains. And you just think, I don't know how to begin to explain this to you. So like having the opportunity to go on Gardener's World and just exist and say, oh, by the way, I'm autistic, that might change the way you feel about what the spectrum looks like and who can be on it. And that reaches, 2 million people? That's such an amazing opportunity. it still kind of blows my mind. And I was so excited to hear like Monty Don mention it as well. Felt really, really validating.
Surreal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So surreal. It's,
you know, that's someone that a lot of people look up to and will respect what he's saying. So that felt like a really, really good step.
What's the response been to that? That must have been overwhelming.
Yeah, it's been super lovely. I think I expected more people to kind of find me in the online space and be like, maybe a bit hostile, maybe like, I didn't understand that, I disagree with you. But actually, it was a lot of my friends and family sending these really, really lovely messages. And it was such a moving experience, because it was kind of like, you know, when you go to a funeral and there's an outpouring of love for a person and you just think, I wish they could have experienced this when they were alive. Yeah. I like got to experience that and it was amazing. And
well,
it really
what a great way to explain that.
Yeah, it was not something I expected at all. It was absolutely magical.
So the garden itself, we can't ignore the garden because it's part of the massive reason that this is all kind of existing. When you took that space on, what was it like before you started working on it? Was there an established garden? Did you have to change a lot? Or
yeah, so the person that lived in this house maybe 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, was a tree surgeon. And now they've got a flower farm, and they did a lot of groundwork. So they'd put in a polytunnel and a really big greenhouse, lovely pond. And then since they'd moved out, things had just gotten really overgrown. So it was like we had to peel back all of this overgrown stuff to get back to that structure. Sure. But the structure that was under there was really, really wonderful. Right. It just took a long time to get the invasive stuff out.
So what was the actual cottage like? Did that need work?
It did. I think it was our first house, and I think we were quite naive, and I saw it and just fell in love with it. And I was like, it's perfect. Yeah. Nothing needs doing. And then you move in and you're like, oh, it doesn't have central heating. That might be a problem.
Oh, did it not have central heating?
No.
Oh my God.
So we did have to do quite a lot, and I don't think we expected it. And we've been doing it slowly over the years because it's just too expensive to do everything at once. But I think we're in a place now, we've been here for 4 years and it's comfortable, and I think we're starting to feel like we've made our mark on it. And that's really great.
So the garden wise, was there much that you really knew that you wanted to do? Because I bet was it one of those kind of situations where you saw it and you thought, okay, well, I can picture this here, I can picture that there? Or did you kind of go with the flow? Or
it's definitely a case of going with the flow, because I've been learning while I've been gardening. And if I look back to what I knew when we moved in, I think it was essentially nothing. So I had kind of visions of the things that I loved, and I knew I loved peonies, but I don't think I really had a sense of how time moves through the garden year. And I think you'll know as well, won't you? You have to go through it and fail and see how things move to have that clock kind of programmed into your brain. So I think until maybe last year, so 3 years in, I got a sense of that. And now I feel like I can understand a bit about how to curate what I actually want. But I think the first 3 years were just trial and error.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I think it's funny you say that about the 3 years, because I always say this. I think you don't know your garden in a new space if you've got no existing knowledge of it. I'm just looking out at my garden thinking this exact same thing. But I think 3 years is the perfect amount of time, because the first year, you've got no idea what you're doing at all. You don't know the aspect properly, and you don't know what the soil's properly like and all that kind of stuff. So then you use a bit of that learning for the second year, but then you're still learning things. But then I think in that third year, you're like, okay, well, I understand this space now, and I know kind of fully what I can do with it. But then I think you get nervous in the fourth year and want to redo it all.
Yeah, I am so experiencing that. that's very relatable.
What do you want to redo? What are you wanting to change?
I think there is this thing of, so I buy a lot of my plants as plug plants or like 9 centimeter pots because it's cheaper. So they do take about 3 years to get going and then look amazing. So I think I look back at the ones I put in at the beginning and I think, why did I choose that? It's such a bright color. And so I'm sort of in this limbo where I don't want to dig out these lovely mature plants that I've got and start again with the smaller ones. But I love soft pastel colours, and I think I didn't know where to get plants from in the early days either. I would just go to the bog standard garden centre down the road and buy whatever they had. And then over time, I've figured out which seed catalogues I like or which wholesaler I want to go to, found these amazing nurseries. And I think my tools were so limited, but I built something up with not much knowledge and not much tools. Yeah. And now that's what I've got.
I love this. I really love conversations with younger people. I don't know how how long you can, we can call ourselves young for. I don't know what the what the cutoff point is, but
yeah.
Because I think that it's such a like maybe from the outside in, but from our perspective, it's not. But I think from the outside in, it's such a, young people don't garden. That's still definitely a thing. And I think that finding this whole world of gardening is so, it's so amazing. Like once you get, you know, when you, everyone goes through this period where they enjoy it and then they realize that they're completely addicted to it. And you're finding out about garden centers and nurseries and like the seasons and how everything changes and like garden shows and all that kind of stuff. It's mad that that world exists that you're totally oblivious to until you're fully immersed. Do you feel like you've thrown yourself into it like wholeheartedly?
Yeah, it's the reason I wake up every day now. And you probably feel the same. I think a lot of us do, don't we? And you look out the window first thing and you check the weather forecast and you're like, am I going to get out there today?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what's next then? You've done so, so much already. Like, what can we expect next? There must be something exciting.
Yeah. I've got a secret project bubbling under the surface that I can't reveal.
Oh.
And that's probably going to be like a year's time until I can reveal it. But something exciting's happening.
Oh, okay. Well, I look forward to hearing whatever that will be.
Yeah.
Lovely. Okay. Well, we've got to that point where I've got three questions for you that I'm asking everyone on this season. They're not tough questions. They're not hard-hitting questions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Question number one is, if you were to start your garden again completely from scratch, where would you start and what would you change?
I think I would probably go on a bit of an intensive course and get some knowledge would be the thing I would do before I started. What would I change? Maybe I wouldn't change anything, because I think you have to do that trial and error stuff, don't you? You can't garden unless you failed a bit.
Yeah.
So I think I wouldn't change a thing.
Is there one thing in the garden that comes to mind when I said that? Was there a part of your garden that you thought, oh, that I'm not quite sure about that? Or was a part of it I'm not entirely happy with?
I think it's a question I would have loved to given the previous owners of our garden who planted a bamboo with the invasive type and it went everywhere. I wish I could have said to them, you know, maybe that's not the best idea, because 5 years down the line, we're going to be dealing with that. I'm still cutting it down every day now. There are definitely plants that come to mind that I think shouldn't be in the garden.
Seems like a great idea at the time, doesn't it? Bamboo for whoever plants it. But yeah, it's not great, is it?
Okay. Yeah.
Second question. What is the favourite scent in your garden?
Ooh, I love, in my polytunnel, I've underplanted everything with chamomile because I'm trying to do living mulches to keep the moisture in. And when I water it, the smell, it's not the same as like drinking chamomile tea or smell it. It's something about water going on chamomile at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And the same with the tomato leaves when you're watering your tomatoes, a mixture of those two things. That's the nicest and reminds me of summer. And it's something that when it's winter and they're not growing, I can't wait to be able to do that again.
Have you got any salvias in your garden?
Only a couple, but not very many, no. Do you?
You would, yeah, I love salvias. And I think the same thing with watering. I know you're not really meant to like water on the top of plants, obviously, but there's something about like after it rains or when you've just watered a salvia, the waft of the scent just like completely hits you in the face. I think you'd love it. I think you need some
that
more salvias.
That sounds really nice. Yeah.
Cool. And the last question, why does gardening bring you so much joy?
I think it's just that there has to be something innate about it, doesn't there? I think probably humans have been growing things as part of our survival. So I think it taps into something really, really human and really essential. And when you kind of, even if you haven't done it before, it feels like it's a rediscovery because it feels like it's something that you're just meant to do. And it just feels so natural. It's like breathing or talking, walking, whatever. It's just, it feels like it's a fundamental part of being human. And it feels like everybody needs to tap into that to feel like themselves.
If you'd like to see Ramona's garden for yourself online, then do check her out on Instagram at Monologue. That's MONALOGUE. Do follow along for more flowers, plants, and animals that resemble the world of Beatrix Potter. Join me again next week where I'll be in conversation with another fantastic planty guest. Until then, you can follow me on Instagram at viewfromthepottingbench to see what I'm up to in my garden, or visit viewfromthepottingbench.com to read my weekly blog and much more. And don't forget, just before you go, if you've got a few spare minutes, then do consider leaving a rating and a review on your podcast platform of choice. See you again next week.